everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Lead podcast brought to you by Ability, an experiential learning company based in beautiful Austin, Texas. I'm your host, Matthew Confer, and today on the show, we have Michael Batnick. Michael is a managing partner at Ritholtz Wealth Management. Michael is also the author of Big Mistakes, The Best Investors and Their Worst Investments. He is also the co-host of the Animal Spirits podcast and the Compound and Friends podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today, Michael.
Happy to be here.
I want to kick us off with your origin story. So what got you into the world of finance originally, and how did you find your way to Ritholtz Wealth Management?
All right. I know we don't have a lot of time. I have a long and meandering story. I'll keep it quick. I was a jackass of epic proportions growing up. I did not take my education seriously at all, and I paid a heavy price for that. The price was getting kicked out of the same university two times. And it was after I graduated eventually, a year and a half late from Queens College, right into the teeth of the great financial crisis, I had this epiphany, this realization, oh, this is why people paid attention to their education. Like, it dawned on me. I mean, how stupid is that? And so I got a job at the only place that I was suited to work for, which was at an insurance company. Because they'll take anybody if you have a pulse. There was no salary. I was paying rent, and I was calling strangers to sell a product that I didn't believe in to people that wanted nothing to do with me during a time where the financial world was in free fall. So not a great start. I made $416 in 2010, and I stayed there for 18 months, not because, and I was the last one in my group of young individuals. I was the last one standing, and that's not an accomplishment. It's the opposite. Everybody else left because they realized how horrendous it was. I couldn't leave because I had nowhere to go. I had no skills, no resume, no nothing, no confidence. I had nothing to offer to anybody. And what did I do? I went to the library and I made up for lost time. I got very serious about educating myself. Signed up for the CFA exam without any work experience, and I got myself an education. And I was lucky enough to meet my future partner, Josh Brown, who was a role model of mine. I met him at the train station. We grew up in the same town. And so I took that opportunity when I walked past him. I turned around and basically tackled him. And a couple of months later, we were working together. So that in, I don't know, 2 minutes or less is my story.
You once posted that when Ritholtz Wealth started in September of 2013, you had less than $100 million under management. You then said that by the 10th birthday of the company, you had grown to almost $4 billion under management. What have you personally learned about leadership and maybe effective leadership in a period of immense growth for the company?
Ooh, a lot. As mentioned, I did not get an MBA. I did not come from a corporate background. I always had a good work ethic. I worked my entire life. From the time I was, I guess, 16. Hold on, let me turn this up. Maybe let me just turn this off. So I was always either cabana boy or a caddy or a valet parker or a waiter. So I always knew how to work hard. So that has served me well. But to answer your question, I've learned that hiring matters a lot. It's the most important thing, and that is cliche for a reason. The people are the most important asset at the company, so much so that we instituted a policy here that we don't hire anybody. We're now at 60 something. I think we're just over 60 people. We don't hire anybody. It doesn't matter where on the totem pole they are. We don't hire anybody without spending the day with them in person. Because we have learned that people can be really good at faking it, at misrepresenting themselves, at telling you what they think you want to hear. But you can't really know somebody even a little bit until you spend the day with them. Now, doesn't mean that we're always going to get it right, but we're willing to fly them out, to put them up, and we've dodged a lot of bullets that way. And the reason why it's so important is because listen, we've been doing this. This is our 10th birthday. So we have a pretty good track record in terms of hiring well, but it's not perfect. And everybody that came here that didn't work out, and it's a pretty small list, has been massively disruptive. Massively just takes up way too much mental real estate. So we want to be slow to hire and quick to do the opposite. That's one piece of advice that I would give. The other is that, and this is like very sort of specific, so I don't know why it just popped into my brain, but titles matter a lot more than maybe the people giving the titles would think. People become tied to it. It becomes a part of their identity. And you can think that you're giving somebody sort of a promotional raise by giving them a bigger title, but that can backfire if the title is too large that it require that they can almost like weaponize it against you, right? If the pay doesn't match or anything like that. I don't know why I thought about that one, but yeah, that one occurred to me.
We were talking before we hit record. You wrote a blog post entitled 20 Lessons Learned. And one of the lessons was diversification is the only answer to an unpredictable future. And another one of your lessons said, past performance is not indicative of future performance, past behavior is. So I know you wrote those lessons with a lens towards investing, but extrapolate out to life and your work. Why do you believe that diversification is the only answer to an unpredictable future? And why is past behavior so much more important than past performance?
Well, with the diversification thing, it's really simple. I am a big believer of don't put all your eggs in one basket. There is countering advice. I think this is Stanley Druckenmiller who said, put all your eggs in one or two baskets and then watch that basket very closely. That guy's a billionaire. He has earned the right to say that. I think that's horrendous advice for the average investor. You don't know what is going to be the best performing stock or sector or geography or market cap or asset class or anything like that. So I think that now everybody, diversification means different things to different people, but I think that not to eliminating a single source of failure is, it's just common sense. Leverage or anything like that, it's buried a lot of people. And the second part of that was past behavior. You are who you are. I think that I've done a really good job with learning who I am as an investor. Everybody has their own risk tolerance and everybody has a line which they shall not pass. Nobody can tell you where your line is. The only time where you can learn where that is by going over it. And hopefully you do that early and often enough so that you can recover from it. And so the most important job of an investor is to know thyself. Not everybody is able to buy and hold individual stocks. Not everybody is able to buy and hold even index funds. You have to know who you are as an investor. You have to know how much pain you can really tolerate. And I think a really useful hack for that is don't think about percentages, just think about dollars. So if you have a portfolio of $10,000 and you say, I don't think I could see this drop below $7,000, wonderful. You have a frame of reference, then you should not be in any sort of investment vehicle that can decline more than 30%. Like, you have to know that about yourself. I think that is the single most important thing for an investor to do.
What's the biggest change that you've ever made in how you organize your day? Like, how have you evolved as a leader or as a professional over the years? We're now looking back at it. You're proud of who you become and kind of how you organize your day, whether it be goal setting, whether it be productivity, anything.
I am chaotic. If you were to look at my desktop or if you were to look over my shoulder, I am doing 15 things at once, none of them very well. One small change that I made, because I'm the king of overbooking and double booking. I canceled on you twice by accident. I've finally incorporated Calendly into my life, which sounds like a small thing, and it is. That's made managing my schedule a lot easier. I have no advice to give to anybody. I am a true disaster.
We've talked to people in a lot of different industries. What do we on the outside not understand about working in the finance industry?
This is like every other business in the world, but maybe even more so. This is a relationship business, pretty much period. Now, of course, you have to show decent competency and you have to be able to meet the client's goals and all that sort of stuff. But Josh always says this, people do business with people they like. And it's that simple. It's definitely not about being the smartest or having the fanciest formulas or the best, you know, verbiage or anything like that. It's to people like you, to people trust you. That's it. And that is true in pretty much all walks of life, but especially this business.
A lot of people on the show have talked about balance. And as your firm has grown, as your public perception has grown, given the podcast, how have you balanced work and family life?
I don't think I do a great job there. Now, I'm beyond blessed. I have two boys. They're 5 and 7. I'm with them every morning. I get them out of bed and I put them on the bus. And it's really a gift that I'm able to do that. I do that 5 days a week. Outside of that, it's not that I'm neglecting them, because I'm not. But I love to work and I work a lot. So I am 7 days a week. I don't have great advice for balance because I don't do a lot of it. So I'm cognizant of it. I'm trying to be better with removing some of the distractions, but I really enjoy what I do. And obviously I love my boys. I love my family. So I go to their games when I'm not traveling. I'm very much present, but I'm also working a lot. I'm trying, but I'm not great at it, is the short answer.
You mentioned in one of your earlier answers about luck and preparation, and you once wrote that your life is the roll of 100 dice, each with a dozen numbers, and it's uncomfortable to think about how random your circumstances can be. But if you have a positive attitude and you work hard, you give yourself a better chance at getting lucky in life. I mentioned before we started recording that we have a lot of young professionals that listen to the show. What is your advice to those that are early on in their career? How do you prepare to thrive when the luck rolls your way?
I don't know anybody that's gotten luckier than me. That is just a fact. I was very close to just mailing it in and going to work at, you know, Verizon or something, like at the retail store. I was really that far out of options. And if I didn't meet Josh, I mean, he saved my life. I owe everything to him. Now, in terms of the preparedness part of it, I was desperate for somebody to give me a chance. I had this weird thing where I had a ton, probably an irrational amount of inner confidence that I knew that if somebody would open a door for me, that I would work humbly, not pretending that I knew the answers. And I was very coachable and willing to put in the time, because I had put in the time, but I didn't have that outward confidence. So I wasn't able to maximize my surface area of luck by going to networking events and popping into somebody's email inbox or doing the things that are necessary to maximize your chances of getting lucky. I don't have any regrets because everything worked out perfectly for me, really and truly, but there are a million things that I should have done differently. So yeah, I got lucky.
One thing that you've wrote about before and talked about before, whether it's movie recommendations or anything, is that a big part of life is expectation setting. You said, I'm big into expectations versus reality, but I think even I underestimate how foundational this is to everything, whether it's books or movies or trips or food or anything really. Can you talk about the power of expectations?
Yeah, it's everything. That's what drives the market. Like really, it's expectations. It's everything. It's the foundation of how everything works. And unfortunately, even though I am so cognizant of that, I don't think you can set your expectations. I think that it's something that happens subconsciously. You can try and trick yourself. Let's say that you're going to watch Dune 2. You could say, it's probably not going to be that great in order to like maximize the chances of you stepping over your bar. But that's bullshit because you feel how you feel. I have super high expectations for Dune and maybe they meet him, maybe they don't. You can't like trick your brain into, so your expectations are built into the fabric of your being. I think that there are things that you can do. So like when you're starting a relationship with a financial advisor, for example, that's a very specific sort of example where what we do, I think really well is we set expectations. We set reasonable expectations. We tell you exactly what we're going to do. And then we do it. And then we have to remind you what we told you what we were going to do. And then we have to continue to do it. So I think there are a million different examples of expectation management. The first one that I gave you, you can't control what you expect something to be. But if, when you're going into business, when you're doing certain things, you can certainly have realistic expectations to make sure that there's zero gap between what you think is going to be delivered versus what actually will be received.
I want to close today with a question about a heartfelt blog post you wrote in 2022. You wrote about a friend's passing and you wrote, "It's an unfortunate reality of life that we take so many things for granted. Nothing is missed until it's gone." You then said that your uncle would always say, "Enjoy life. This is not a dress rehearsal." Can you share a bit about how you are constantly working to not take things for granted and enjoy life professionally and personally?
So I lost my mother when I was 26 years old, and it was a gigantic, gigantic blow to my life. It's a hole that will never be filled. And it's also a blessing, which sounds very unusual. And it's uncomfortable for me to say it out loud because it's given me a perspective on life that I otherwise would not have. And so because I dealt with such massive tragedy, I don't take anything for granted. So every day, every challenge, every blessing, obviously I wish that my mother was here to see some of the success that I've experienced. But, and I sort of stole this from Colbert was talking to Anderson Cooper, and he said, "I've learned to love the thing which I most wish had not happened," or something like that. And that's exactly how I feel about my mother's death. It changed the trajectory of my life. It changed everything. And I am a better person for it. And I wish I could take it back. I can't. And so that's given me perspective that there's no other way to experience that. So That's the answer there.
Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for all of the great answers. I ask the same two rapid fire questions to every guest. And so the first one is this. If you could describe your leadership style, but I just gave you one word, what would that word be?
Fair.
And the final rapid fire question is this. What is the best piece of advice that you have ever received?
You should outgrow your heroes. You should graduate past whoever, wherever you're coming from, like the first people that you meet, you should continue to graduate. So I don't remember where I heard that. It was probably on a podcast, but I thought that was very applicable to me at the particular time that I heard it, because I was going through something similar and it really resonated with me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
You can find me on the interwebs, I guess, Animal Spirits Podcast, The Compound and Friends, michaelbatnick.com. I'm not that hard to find.
Nice. You can find me on social media at Matthew Confer. You can find our show on Instagram at Ability Sims, and you can find our organization at ability.com. I want to thank Michael again for joining us on this episode. And of course, I want to thank all of you for joining us on the Learn to Lead podcast.
This podcast is produced by Ability, a leading provider of award-winning leadership development. You can find us at www.ability.com. or by searching for Ability Leadership Development. Make sure to also check out our 12-week fully virtual mini MBA, the Invited MBA, a nights and weekends program that features experiential learning, mentorship, case studies, and networking. Find more information at www.invitedmba.com. Finally, be sure to subscribe to our podcast so that you get our next episode. We want to thank you all for joining us on the Learn to Lead podcast. We'll be right back.